All right, Erev Tov, everybody. Welcome. As I guess the first Parsha Shir, the second Parsha Shir of 2023. I guess I was in Morocco last week, but the first one I'm attending live. It's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Daniel Karofkin, the Maradacha, the Rabbi of the Beit, B-A-Y-T, Beit Avraham Yosef of Thornhill, the premier Orthodox synagogue in Canada, but really I think it is the largest Orthodox synagogue, and Rabbi Karofkin is doing a wonderful job. He's now here over 10 years already, and Rabbi Karofkin, you heard before, served as rabbi in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He's written on the Kuzari. He's really a communal leader, and it's a pleasure to welcome back. He really needs no introduction. He has spoken for Torah Motion in the past, and it's really a pleasure and an honor that he takes the time to teach with us. And I just want to wish him a happy birthday. And, right, because as we were discussing before Allentown, Rabbi Karofkin and Armakotenis, Alice noticed they share a birthday, exact same day. So January 11th, I will not mention what year, but Rabbi, I want to wish you a happy birthday, and we look forward to your shir. Thank you very much.
I think Alice and I were born the same day, actually.
Right. Yeah, I'm saying the same day in the same year. Yeah. I know that. That's right. Correct.
Anyway, well, thank you. Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman, and it's nice to see what a lovely turnout there is tonight for this year. I want to thank you for giving me the honor of sharing some words of Torah with you on this wonderful platform, which really features so many great scholars that I, you know, it's humbling to be a part of that roster. What I'd like to be able to do with you tonight is to go over with you the Ma'arei Mekomot, the sources that I used to prepare my drasha that I give to my kehillah this week. And it really is a shir, because in preparing a drasha, a rabbi has to really develop an entire shir that could be sometimes hours long, and then whittle it down, reduce it, sort of almost like cooking, where you do a reduction, where you have to really evaporate all of the material that won't fit into that 8-minute message or 7-minute message. But I want to share with you how I got to my thinking process. And let's do that together. So, I actually have two different topics that we could cover tonight, but I think that we may actually just only succeed in doing the first one for this evening. So I'm going to share my screen. And I hope that Rabbi Kelman, is everyone able to see it?
I hope so. It looks good to me. On my end, it looks very good.
Okay.
It's good.
All right, great. Thank you. So the topic of the shir is, we all ask, who am I? Mi anochi. Who am I? Now, who said mi anochi in this week's parsha? Can someone tell me? I saw someone mouthing Moshe.
Moshe.
Now, so something that immediately struck me is that when you look carefully at the psukim, you look carefully at the verses from chapter 3 and chapter 4 of Exodus, there were a number of questions that Moshe presented to God when God first told him that he was going to be.
We just started the Parsha Shir.
Hi, sorry. When God originally told Moshe, ve'ata lecha ve'eshlachacha el paro, in chapter 3, God says to Moshe, now you're going to go, and I'm going to send you to Paro, v'hotzeyat ami b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, and you're going to take my nation of Israel from Egypt. So Moshe did not immediately respond with, sounds like a great plan, God, I'm ready to go. Hineni. He did not say that. But instead, Moshe asked a number of questions. And in the course of asking those questions, there were three times when Moshe tried to reject the offer. And that actually reminded me of an interesting halakha that appears in the Shulchan Aruch. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot, Brachot or Birchot HaShachar, it's in Siman Nun Gimel in Orach Chaim, and that's your first source on the screen. It says, "Mi she'eino shliach tzibur kavua. If there is no fixed cantor in the synagogue, and someone is, and the gabbai is looking for someone to lead the davening, tzarich lisarev ma'at kodem sheyered lifnei hateva. A person should have the humility to turn down the offer initially when asked to lead the services. Velo yoter midai, but a person should not be excessively reluctant. So Ella, so what's the protocol? Pa'am rishona misarev. First time the gabbai comes over to you, say, no, please, no, not me. Ucheshayomer lo pa'am shniya, mechin atzmo kemo sherotze la'amod. When the gabbai asks you the second time, you should sort of say, and then sort of prepare yourself, button your jacket, but you haven't really jumped up yet. And then uvapam shlishit ya'amod. And the third time that he asks you, you should stand up already. And then you should go without interruption. Ve'im ha'omer lo shi'ered hu adam gadol, ein ha'misarev lo klal. And if the person telling you to do it is an adam gadol, is an important person, then you shouldn't even hesitate for a moment. So putting that last line aside, because there's no adam gadol greater than the Ribono Shel Olam himself, I was thinking to myself, so why is it that when Moshe, we're going to look at the psukim, Moshe demurred three times from God's request to act as his proxy. But it was only at the third time that God got upset. It says, Vayichar af Hashem, that God's anger was flared against Moshe. Why only on the third time? It seems to me that it's because of this halacha. At least that's what it jumped out at me, is that there's proper etiquette to say, no, sir. You know, I don't know if anyone's ever been present in shul. Certainly some of the men may be able to readily associate with this. If you've noticed the gabbai walking around the men's section before davening, trying to find someone to act as the shliach tzibur. So there are some people who are so eager to lead the davening, and they are ready and looking and just anticipating the gabbai. As soon as he walks in, they're just praying that he'll come over to me. But for most people, it's almost as if they look down and hope that the gabbai won't look at them. And you learn a lot about people's character in interacting with them as a gabbai. But I'll put that aside. If anyone has an interesting anecdote, you could share it with it later. Where does this halacha come from? This halacha comes from a passage in the Talmud Brachot, which said on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, page 34a. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, which is the introduction of a Braita, which is a text from the times of the Mishnah. Ha'over lifnei ha'teva tzarich lisarei. If a person is being invited to be the cantor, he needs to initially refuse. Ve'im eino misarev, if he doesn't refuse, domeh l'tavshil she'ein bo melach, then he's comparable to a cooked food which has not been properly salted. It's pretty bland, right? Now, we'll have to try and figure out why this analogy, okay? Ve'im misarev yoter midai, if he refuses excessively and gives the gabbai a hard time, then he's like a food that has been oversalted and it doesn't taste good. So So what should he do? Pam rishana yisarev. The first time the gabbai asks you, refuse. Shnia mehavhev. The second time, vacillate. Mehavhev. It's one of those great words which sounds like the action itself. And shlishit, poshet et raglav yored. Third time, just stand up already and get over to the bima. And the Braita concludes by saying, Shlosha ruban kasheh umiutan yafeh. There are three things that if you have an excess of it, it's very bad. But if you have a small amount, small pinch, it's really good. And they are yeast, salt, and refusal. Don't be an absolute refuser. But also don't be so eager, because that's a lack of humility as well. So refuse a little bit, put in a moderate amount of salt to your food, and then that's a good thing. Now, so I was thinking to myself, so where does this, is that the reason why God became angry with Moshe? And if indeed Moshe was overly reluctant to do the job, what justification did he have for turning Hashem down three times when you're really not supposed to do that? So the first thing I wanted to point out is that I was able to find a commentary who actually suggests this idea. And the Sfat Emet, the Ger Rebbe. Can everyone see the screen okay? Yeah. The Sfat Emet suggested that there are three biblical personalities that embody the three different types of people who, when asked to do something, what their behavior is. And this is actually the Sfas Emes on Parshas Korach, which later on in the Parsha talks about the importance of salt on the altar. And it says, De'isa b'gemara ha'over lifnei ha'teva, because we know he quotes the Gemara, the Sfas Emes, just like we quoted above. Ve'aharon ha'kohen, shebochar bo ha'kadosh baruch hu, asa ha'sherut kedin. Aharon was selected by God to be the priest. And the priest has to be very measured in his behavior. To be a minister in the temple, you've got to be very moderate, middle of the road, no extremism in either direction. Kemo shekosov b'midrash kishemoshach oto Moshe Rabbeinu nizdazeya v'chule. And we know that the Medrash tells us that when Moshe first approached Aharon to be the high priest, Aharon trembled, and the Medrash describes the psychological trauma that he was still suffering from the act of the golden calf, to the point where the altar assumed the form of a bovine animal, because he was having flashbacks to the whole episode of the golden calf. Kamo shekatuv kiravel hamizbeach lama atbosh lekach nivcharta. And the Medrash ends by Moshe telling Aharon, don't demur, even though you feel trauma, and even though you feel embarrassed because of your participation in the golden calf, do not demur any further. You were chosen for this. And it only took one time where Moshe had to tell Aharon, don't demur any further, don't refuse any further, and then Aharon agreed. So Aharon was very measured. Initially, he withdrew from candidacy, but when Moshe put a little bit of pressure, he finally relented. Korach is the example. So Aharon is the example of the well-seasoned meal, perfect amount of salt. Korach should be kesh me'atzmo ha'kuhuna, v'lo ha'yelo chelek b'tzar vanut, e'efshir lihiyot kohen. Korach is an extremist. Not only did he not refuse the offer, but he inserted himself in leadership when he was not even invited. It's like the guy who's standing at the Amud before davening starts, and no one's asked him to lead the davening, and he says, I'm going to daven Shacharis this morning, right? That's the Korach attitude. And it says, because a Kohen is called upon not to take broad steps. He's got to have measured steps, measured behavior. And then finally, Moshe Rabbeinu Olav HaShalom Ito Shesirev Yoter Midai Basne. But Moshe refused excessively in the story of the burning bush, or at the event at the burning bush. V'lachein Nital Mimenu HaKehuna. And that's the reason why the priesthood was taken away from him. Because Moshe was like, as the Talmud says, the oversalted food. And in other words, there was too much reluctance, too much refusal to move forward. And therefore, he lost the kahuna as well. Again, the kahuna requires a very measured kind of individual. So just in case you're wondering, what are the three passages? And it's something that's worth looking at together. The first one occurs where God first tells Moshe, Ve'ata lecha ve'eshlachacha el paro. It's in chapter 3, verse 10. God says, now I want you to go. I'm going to send you to Paro. Take my nation, B'nai Yisrael, out of Egypt. And by the way, Rabbi Kelman, if you feel that I'm not translating sufficiently, please notify me. I don't want anyone to feel that they're not being serviced in the shir, okay?
Okay, so, but I don't have to do that. The people themselves can tell you and let in, but I think it's fine. But if anybody would like more translation, please do let us know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So what is Moshe's initial response? Vayomer Moshe el ha-Elokim. Mi anochi, who am I? Ki eilech el paro, v'chi otzi et b'nei Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. Who am I that I should be able to go to Paro and that I should be able to take B'nai Yisrael out of Egypt? In other words, according to most Meforshim, Moshe was astounded at the two expectations that were being placed upon him. Number one, that he should have the chutzpah just to saunter into Paro's palace without an invitation. And according to some commentaries, it's especially difficult for Moshe because if you remember, Paro earlier had tried to have him arrested and tried for murder. So for him to now go back to Paro, back to Paro's court with impunity and expect to be unmolested and just to be able to walk in there and make a demand. And even if he would be able to go in, who's to say that Paro would listen to him? And so some commentaries learn, v'chi otzi et b'nei Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim, is even if I get an audience with Paro, how in the world would I ever expect Paro to listen to this insane demand that he free the slave class? And some commentaries learn that Moshe's question was, how am I going to convince the Jews that they should listen to me and leave their homeland behind and leave all of their possessions and just follow me out into the desert? So God responds to him, very important words in Pasuk Yud Beit. Vayomer ki eheye imach, I will be with you. And I want to get back to that in just a minute. And a lot of the Meforshim have a tremendous difficulty with the following words. I will be with you, says God. V'zeh lecha ha'ot ki anochi shalachticha. And this is the sign that I have sent you. We then go to the latter part of the pasuk, b'hotziacha ta'am mi-Mitzrayim, when you take the nation out of Egypt, ta'avdun et ha'elokim al ahar hazeh, you will worship the Lord on this mountain. Now, the simple reading of this verse is, this is the sign that I have sent you. When you take the nation out of Egypt, you will worship God on the mountain. Now, if Moshe was looking for a sign to convince the Jewish people to listen to him, how could the sign come after the expectation of taking them out? If I need a sign to help me convince them to leave with me into the desert, how can the sign that's going to convince them be only evidenced once we've left Egypt? Doesn't make any sense. The whole verse really doesn't make any sense when you think about it. So before we get into that, I'm going to give you a variant reading of this verse. But let's look at the second and third times that Moshe refuses. God further tells Moshe, you will tell the Jewish people who I am, because Moshe said when they're going to ask me, v'amruli mashemo, they're going to ask me, what is his name? What should I say to them? And God tells them, eheye, asher eheye, you know, that famous passage, I am that I am. And you shall say to them that the Lord of your ancestors, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, has come to me, and et cetera, et cetera. But then later on, after all of this discussion, and Moshe says, they're not going to believe me. And Hashem tells him, of course they'll believe you. And then God gives him the three miracles. He tells him to take water, pour it on the ground, and it turns into blood. He tells him to take his staff, throw it to the ground, and it turns to a staff. He tells Moshe to stick his hand in his bosom, in his cloak, and pull it out, and it becomes leprous. All of that is happening at the beginning of chapter 4. We've skipped over that because these are not where Moshe is objecting to be God's proxy. He's just asking God, tell me how this is going to work. But then after all of that takes place, we skip now to chapter 4, verse 10. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, be Adonai. Moshe says to God, be. What is the word be? In me. Which some of Meforshim understand it to mean is, God, there's still a problem within me. In other words, it's like when you want to break up with someone, what do you say? It's not you, it's me, right? So Moshe is basically saying to Hashem, God, it's me. There's a problem. Why is there a problem? Lo ish devarim anochi gam itamol gam mishilshom. I am not a person of words, right? And how do you expect me to communicate if I have a speech impediment? That's really Moshe's argument. God responds to that. And God says, Misampela Adam in verse 11. God says, who gave man a mouth? Who arranges for a person to be blind or deaf or mute? It's me, God. If I want to make you eloquent as Shakespeare and say the words with tremendous precision, then your speech impediment will be meaningless. I will arrange for the words to come out of your mouth. Finally, in verse number 13, Vayomer bi Adonai. Moshe again says the same words. He says, but God be, it's me, God. Shalach na biyad tishlach. Send. Now the word na is alternatively translated as now or please. But Moshe says, shalach na biyad tishlach. Send now with a hand send. Those words, we can't even understand what they mean if we just translate them. Shalach na, send now. Biyad tishlach, with a hand send. What does that mean? And that's the third time that Moshe basically says, send somebody else. And that's why in verse 14, the verse says, Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. God's anger was kindled against Moshe. Vayomer, and God says, Halo Aharon achicha halevi, yadati ki daber yidaberhu. Moshe, I know that your brother Aharon will be joining you. He will be able to speak. And behold, he's coming to greet you while we're speaking at this moment. And when he sees you, he's going to rejoice. And we get an inkling that Moshe's reluctance, at least at this juncture, is because he feels bad that his older brother, Aharon, is not being asked. And he doesn't want to arouse any jealousy in his brother. And God has to respond. He's not jealous. He loves you. He's proud of you. You're his kid brother who's going to be the Redeemer of Israel, and he'll help you in this process. Why is God angry at Moshe? And what exactly are the words that Moshe is presenting to God to lodge a desire to refuse the mission? We don't even understand that. So in order for us to, so just to review our questions, we don't understand why Moshe, especially if the halakha states that you're not supposed to be overly reluctant to take a task that is placed upon you, certainly not by God. What justification can we offer for Moshe refusing this role? And second of all, we don't even understand the words that Moshe offered for the third time. We can understand refusing the first time, the second time, the halacha allows for that. We don't understand why Moshe refused the third time, and we don't even understand what he actually said. So in order for us to begin to understand an answer, I want to refer you to a commentary from Rabbi Shmuel ben Meir, or the Rashbam, who was Rashi's grandson. He has a brilliant commentary to the Torah. And as a matter of fact, I know that Rabbi Lukshin, Professor Lukshin, is a frequent lecturer for this group, and he is a Rashbam expert, as there are many. I don't know if we'll have time to go through the entire Rashbam, but he understands that when Moshe said, Mi Anochi, who am I that I should go to Paro? He understands that the first question was, how am I ever going to get an audience with Paro? I'm a commoner. I'm a wanted criminal. And how am I ever going to convince him, even if I do get in to see him, that I should be permitted to take the Jews out of Egypt? That's how he understands the question. So just to cut to the chase, V'hakadosh heshiv lo al rishon rishon ve'amar, God answered Moshe for each question. He said, V'amar ki ehye imach, I will be with you. Ve'etein chincha be'enei hamelech, I will create a miracle whereby when Paro sees you, he will want to welcome you into his palace. You will not have a hard time. Okay? V'telech el Paro velo tira. You'll be able to go to Paro and you will not fear. And the reason why I have the next line in bold is because I think it's absolutely brilliant. You know that there are many interpretations as to what the meaning of the burning bush was supposed to be to Moshe. What is the imagery? Hasne bo'er ba'esh v'hasne einenu ukal. The bush is burning but is not consumed. So many commentaries say it's a reference to the Jewish people themselves, that their suffering is like the burning of the bush, but not only are they not being destroyed by the suffering, but they are flourishing and thriving, etc. But look at the Rashbam's interpretation. Uma sha'at yare lifnei paro, ze lecha ha'ot ki anochi shelachticha. He says, I know you're scared, Moshe, to go before Paro. But look at how he understands the next words in the pasuk. Vayomer ki ehaye imach, v'ze lecha ha'ot ki anochi shelachticha. This, that which God is pointing to at the very moment that he's speaking to Moshe, which is the burning bush. This burning bush is the sign that I have sent you. That's how the Rashbam understands it. Halo ata ro'eh betav erat hasneh. You can see through the burning of the bush, ki shlucho shel hakadosh ani, that you can say to yourself or say to Paro that I am God's representative, no different from a burning bush. V'ze ha'ot lecha hu lihiyot batuach she'ehye imach. And the burning bush is the symbol of my being with you. In other words, what Hashem was guaranteeing to Moshe, you know how sometimes you know your limitations. And Moshe was basically saying, "Mi anochi? I'm a nobody. I don't have the wherewithal. I don't have the resources. Even if I wanted to do the job that you're asking me, God, I simply lack the faculties to be able to go to Paro's palace, to get an audience with him, and to convince him to let the Jews free." What does God say to him? Look at that bush. You think that that bush is imbued with natural energy? If the bush was a normal bush, it would be totally incinerated in a matter of seconds once it caught fire. But the fact is that sometimes we are imbued with an energy, a miraculous energy that comes from outside of ourselves. If God so wishes us to be imbued with a certain power that we don't believe we possess within us, he will imbue us with superhuman strength and abilities that are far beyond those of mortal men, and we will be able to accomplish miraculous things, and we will not be consumed by that superhuman energy that is implanted within us, just like a bush will not be consumed by the fiery energy that is embedded within it. And what basically the burning bush, according to the Rashbam, is an example of what you, Moshe, are about to become. You are going to be so filled with energy, so filled with power that would normally destroy a regular human being. But in your case, you will be able to survive and to contain that energy and to use it to convince Paro to let the Jews go. And that is how the Rashbam understands the entire metaphor of the burning bush. Now, once we understand that idea, now we are still left with the question, okay, if that's the case, then how could Moshe have any further objections? Okay, so what is objection number two and what is objection number three? So objection number two, let's remember, Moshe says, I have a speech impediment. Why would you send me as your representative if I, after all, have a speech impediment? So take a look at the Malbim. Vayomer, this is the Malbim. By the way, the Netziv in his Ha'amek Davar says something very similar to what the Malbim says. Vayomer Moshe lo ish devarim anochi. He writes, Hanavi shehu shliach el ha'am lelamdam ulahanhigam. Whenever a prophet is sent by God to teach them and to guide them, tzarich shiyihye ba'al lashon v'dover tzachut bi'inyan shiyikansu devarav be'oznei ha'am. He should be an eloquent person. He should be presentable to the nation so that when he stands up and he speaks, people will want to listen to him. People will be receptive to his message. Kemo shekatuv Hashem Elokim netan li lashon limudim Ladat laut et ya'if davar. As the verse says, that God has given me a tongue that has the ability to educate, to know, and to be able to instruct others. V'Yirmiyahu amar, hine lo yadati daber. And he goes on and on and on. And he explains that a prophet is expected to have eloquence in the way he speaks. So why did God select Taka, a man who has a speech impediment? He says, Uchvar, I'm skipping to the next paragraph. Uchvar katav haran, shema shemosha haya kvad pe uchvad lashon, haya mipu'ulat Hashem v'hashkachato. Rabbeinu Nisim, many centuries before the Malbim writes this, had already explained that God deliberately chose Moshe. In other words, Moshe's objection is, if you're going to choose a representative of yourself, and you want me to present myself as your representative to both Paro and to the Jewish people, shouldn't I at least have eloquence of language? Shouldn't I be a fair representation of what you would like human beings to be? Like, I should be the apex of humanity, not someone who's handicapped. So the Ran explains, no, that was Adarabba, just the opposite. God deliberately wanted Moshe to have a speech impediment. V'zeh kedei sheyedu kulam shema sheitzliach b'shlichuto el paro v'el Yisrael, so that people would realize that Moshe's key to success in both speaking to Paro and to the Jews, lo haya al yedei shehaya ba'al lashon umishach lev melech v'sarim v'lev b'nei amo b'koach dibiro b'tzachut l'shono, is that if Moshe had been an eloquent person who was well-versed in the art of rhetoric and had the ability to draw people in with his silver tongue, then people might argue that he really wasn't God's representative, but rather was able to he was just very convincing, very persuasive person. God deliberately chose a person who did not have this outgoing personality, did not have this gift of gab and the ability to speak with eloquence, specifically because people would recognize that he was only a vessel containing God's message. He says the fact that he had a speech impediment and people still revered what he had to say and respected him and accepted him, Yedu ki yad Hashem astazot lo tachbula enoshit v'chelkat lashon u'pitui sfatayim. That people would recognize that this is really an act of God. This is not just the effort of a very skilled human being able to persuade people through the gift of his language. And that was quite deliberate. So when Moshe asks this question, he asks God, why choose me? And God's response, if we go back to the Rashbam, now makes a lot of sense. What is the most combustible vegetation in the desert? It's one of those dried out bushes. So when God wanted to create a miracle in the desert of something burning and not being consumed, why not choose a date tree? Why not choose a very large oak tree? Why not choose a palm tree? The answer is because God wanted to take the most combustible type of vegetation and see that even that was not being consumed by the tremendous fire that was within. God took someone who had the weakest ability to communicate and had the least resistance to this divine fire because he was so dissonant from the divine fire and yet was still able to contain it and to represent it to Paro and to the Jewish people. Now we understand Moshe's second stage of refusal. Why choose me? I have a speech impediment. God's response is, I'm the one who's going to put words in your mouth, Moshe. It's not you. It's going to be me using you as my receptacle. Now let's go to the final. Vayomer, the final objection of Moshe. Vayomer bi Hashem shalach na biyad tishlach. What does this mean? What does this mean at all? So it strikes me that if Moshe was objecting based upon his speech impediment, there could have been another objection that Moshe had. Where else do we see the word biyad in this whole discussion over here? I don't have it for you on the page. But God said to Moshe in verse 19 in chapter 3, Va'ani yadati, I know, ilo yitein lachem melech Mitzrayim, that the king of Egypt will not allow you to leave, velo biyad chazaka, nor because of his strong hand, his strong grip on the people. There is no way that Paro will release the people because he has such a strong grip on the slave class. Moshe's third and final reason for refusing was that if you're going to send somebody, I understand you explain that you can put words in my mouth, but wouldn't you want someone who has a personality that can stand up to a Paro? If Paro is a strong hand, if he has a strong grip on his people, wouldn't you want a person with an equally strong personality who can aggressively speak to Paro, who can stand up to a Paro? I am a person who has been a shepherd for the last several years. I have learned to be a pacifist. I have learned peace out with my flock. Yes, when I was a younger man, perhaps I knew how to stand up to people, but I haven't been that person for quite some time. I'm tending sheep peacefully out in the desert with my flock. Send someone who has a strong personality, God. Shalachna biyad tishlach. Please, God, send someone who is a yad. Just like Paro has a yad, send someone who's a starker, who's a strong man. Don't send me. And that's why God gets upset with Moshe. Because at the end of the day, God says, I expect you as my emissary, as my shaliach, to rise to the occasion. If I ask you to do a task that requires aggression, that requires a little bit of chutzpah, then you need to sublimate your natural character and be able to adapt to the new role that Hashem is assigning to you. But if you can't do that, that's quite disappointing, says Hashem. We will need Aharon to give you strength and to bolster and assist you, because he will have the ability to give you that encouragement and confidence to be able to stand up to Paro. And this is one of the reasons why Moshe loses the kahuna. According to our sages, he loses the kahuna at this point. Like the Sfas Emes had said, he lost the kahuna by refusing the third time. But if we were to really analyze it, the kahuna requires that sense of middle of the road, that sense of equanimity, that the ability not to be too timid and not to be too aggressive, not to be too excitable, nor to be too passive. And the fact that Moshe demurred the third time based on the personality that was required of him to have, that's why God is disappointed in Moshe and shows him his displeasure. So that, I think, is what's going on over here. The first objection is Moshe basically saying, I lack the wherewithal entirely to fulfill this task. Hashem's response to him is, you're a burning bush, Moshe. There is nothing that is within you currently that gives you the wherewithal, but I'm going to place this flame, this energy within you to give you that power, which will not consume you, but will allow you to stand up to Paro. Moshe's second objection is simply the physical handicap. We would expect God's emissary to be a more perfected human being, at least physically, free from defect and an inability to communicate clearly. And God sets Moshe straight, like Rabbeinu Nissim says, that just the opposite. I want everyone to see that it is not your rhetorical skills, but rather it is the fire within you that is shining through. And then the third objection is where Moshe says, I am not, my personality is not strong enough to stand up. Shalachna biyad tishlach. Paro has a strong hand. You need a strong hand to stand up to him. Hashem is upset with Moshe because we all have that obligation to sublimate our natural tendencies and do what Hashem expects of us. And of course, where is this all headed? It's all headed in the direction that every human being at some point in his or her life is called upon to be the proxy of God. And ultimately, we're all going to be asking ourselves the same three questions. Number one, do I have the wherewithal to do this? Perhaps it's impossible. I don't have the resources within my kishkas to be able to accomplish it. And yet sometimes I find myself in a situation where I feel I may have to do it. And so then I have to rely on Hashem to make me into a burning bush, to give me the energy that I currently lack, and to imbue me with a superhuman strength that he will provide me because I am destined to fulfill this role. And we'll ask the second question, do I have the physical stamina and the ability to carry through with this based on my physical strength and capabilities? And there too, a person should not demur simply because they may have this issue or that issue or be too young or be too old, because ultimately Hashem places the words in our mouth and provides us with the skill. And then finally, what if I lack the proper personality resources? And that's the third objection. And that's where we should not even begin to question ourselves. We will learn the ability that we need to sublimate our natural tendencies in order to rise to the occasion. The last thing that I want to mention, which is really the part of this Devar Torah that got me started on the whole thing, but ends up to be something that I feel is sort of should come at the end of this discussion, is something from the Sefer Beis Yaakov, which I'm absolutely enthralled by Rav Yaakov Liner, who was the son of the Ishbitzer Rebbe, Rav Mordechai Liner. Many of you may be familiar with the writings of the Ishbitzer, but the Beis Yaakov is the son of the Ishbitzer who expands on his father's Torah. It's just such profundity that most of the time it's lost on me, but there are some times that I get a glimmer of inspiration from some of his writings. He quotes his father in this essay, a much longer essay that he writes. He says, when Moshe Rabbeinu was asking me anochi, who am I? Rav Liner understands that this was not just the question of, do I have the faculties to be your proxy? But me anochi, who am I, is really an existential question that every person asks himself or herself at some time in their life. Hainu shesha'al lo al yesoda digarmi im zehu ikar chelko v'shorsho. It's the question that we all ask when we're about to undertake a new job, a new relationship, a new project, a new effort, a new chapter in our lives. Is this me? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? This task that I'm taking on, is this my ultimate destiny, or is it a detour from where I'm really destined to go? And this is what Moshe was asking Hashem, mi anochi, who am I, God? Am I going to be known in my final guise to the world as the Redeemer of Israel? Or is this just a temporary temp job, and there's something else that I'm destined to do? Mi anochi, is this really my ikar chelek? Is this my primary role to be the Redeemer of Israel? V'yeshlo shayachut b'hotza'ah, is my involvement in this endeavor going to be integral? V'eze koach natan bo Hashem yitbarach, sha'al yedei ze yuchal lahotzi'am. And what abilities, O God, are you embedding within me to enable to succeed at this task, if indeed I am predestined to become that person you are asking me to become? Who am I? Who am I? Do I have the ability? Is this what I'm destined to be doing? And it's the question of self-doubt that we all have. We all ask ourselves, mi anochi, who am I to become the president of my shul? Who am I to become the rabbi? Who am I to lead this group? Who am I to marry this person? Who am I to take this job? Who am I to be the parent of these children? Who am I? There are so many times we are filled with this uncertainty, whether what I'm embarking on now is really the definitive me, or am, you know, what do they call that? The imposter syndrome. You're all familiar with that idea. The imposter syndrome is where people sometimes think, I'm just pretending to be the person that I am, but it's not really me. And he continues and he says, "Ki likanes lenitzuach tzrichim leida im zehu ikar chelko hamiyuchad lo." In order to succeed in any endeavor, a person has to have a sense of confidence, a certain knowledge that this is something that I'm destined to do. Ve'az tzaricha adam limsor nafsho al zeh. And then and only then can a person feel comfortable completely dedicating themselves and sacrificing themselves over that endeavor. If there's any doubt that maybe I'm not meant to do this, then that will be manifest in the effort. And he gives an example. Kamo Daniel, shemasar nafsho al tfila machmat shezech al kovish orsho. When the Jews were commanded not to pray to anyone other than Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel in Nebuchadnezzar's court was defiant and he insisted on prayer because he knew that prayer was an integral part of who he was. It was his destiny to make a stand over the issue of prayer. V'yada she'ikar ha'gzeira hu rak negdo, machmat she'chelko hu ha'tfila she'itpalel la'Hashem yitbarach gimel pe'amim bayom. He knew that when the decree was made that Jews may not daven, Jews may not pray to their God, he knew that this was directed against him. Lachein masar nafsho al zeh. And that's why he was prepared to go to the nth degree, why he was thrown into the lion's den and so forth and so on. The fact of the matter is that once God answered him in the affirmative, it gave Moshe the strength to be able to soldier on and actually realize his destiny as the Redeemer of Israel. So many times we fail to see that, to get that message, and because we're not prophets, but we can only hope that if we choose something, then we are being guided by some kind of divine whisper in our ears, some divine message that is guiding us along a particular trajectory in our lives. And we can only hope that if we currently lack the resources, then God will make us like a burning bush and give us the faculties that we need in order to succeed and not to be consumed by the effort, just like the burning bush was not consumed. This is what I think that we should all be thinking about. You know, when we read this passage, it's not just a message about Moshe, but it's really a story about each and every one of us who ask me Anochi, who am I? So that's what I wanted to share with you. I guess the last thing I wanted to share with you is this idea of the salty food. Let's go back to that analogy. The person who jumps in too quickly and doesn't think a little bit, it's okay to be pensive and to be cautious and to be filled with a little bit of self-doubt and to plan things methodically and carefully. Because if you don't, if you just jump into an endeavor without giving it any thought, then you're like a person who goes into the kitchen and just takes a raw chicken and throws it in the oven without doing anything to it because he doesn't have time, right? If you are too pensive and too cautious, overly cautious, and you spend too much time deliberating over whether you should take on the endeavor, not take on the endeavor, you're like the person who takes the chicken and starts patchkening with it for hours and hours, and you end up over-seasoning it, over-salting it, and no one's going to end up enjoying it in the end. A person has to have a moderate position of being methodical in their lives, but not overthinking and not being overly cautious and being plagued with excessive amounts of self-doubt. And that's why I think that this whole idea of the person who doesn't refuse at all is like an undersalted food. A person who refuses too much is like an oversalted dish. We all need to be able to know that fine balance, to be able to know when we should proceed with caution and when we should not demur from realizing our destiny. That's also contained, I believe, within this halacha. It's not just about a shliach tzibur, but it's about anyone who's going to rise to take on a leadership role. Okay, we've got a raised hand. That's I think what I wanted to say for tonight. Rabbi Kelman, what do you say?
Yeah, take the questions, Mr. iPad, and then there's a question in the chat box. Bakasha.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. For one, with the analogy about the person has to be shliach tzibur. First of all, a shliach tzibur is representing a community which he belongs to. So before God, Moses didn't belong to them at this point. It was many decades out. But more importantly, One case is representing the community before God. What God was asking him was to represent God before the community, which is the mirror case and not the same case at all. As well, when you're asked to be shliach tzibur, you're asked to do it on a one-time basis for that particular davening. To accept something open-ended, you know, God didn't tell him, and it'll be over in a day, or it'll be over in 3 days. The idea of taking on a task that is open-ended, who accepts something like that? What sane person would accept something like that? Not to put too fine a point on it.
I think your points are very well taken. The analogy is just that. It's an analogy. You're right. Moshe Rabbeinu is a shaliach of Hashem, but he's also acting as a shaliach for the Jewish people. That's why his question was a doubled question. Mi anochi ki eilech el paro, and as some mafarshim understand, v'chi otzi et b'nei Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim, I'm acting as the Jews' proxy as well. But you're right, Mr. iPad, that in the final analysis, it's not a perfect analogy. We're taking a halachic principle and applying it to a biblical story. So you're never going to get a perfect analogy.
All right, Eric, you want to ask your question?
I think it's in the chat.
Oh, maybe in chat. There are a couple of questions in the chat.
Yeah. I think it's, if anyone has noticed that the three kinds of salt that you were talking about could be represented by the Galil, the Mediterranean, and the Dead Sea.
Galil, Mediterranean, and Dead Sea. The three kinds. Kineret, oh, you mean one?
Kineret, the Lake of Galilee. The Lake of Galilee is Kineret. Sweet. Yeah.
So, all right. Kineret. In other words, one has too much salt, one has no salt, and one has the right amount of salt. Very interesting. Interesting. I'm not sure you'd have to create some kind of moral lesson about those three bodies of water and how they connect. I invite you to explore. It sounds wonderful. Please, you should run with it. I would tell you, run with it and let us know what you discover.
Rabbi, you see Gershon's interesting question on Lot's wife?
Yes. My Rebbe Gershon Heppner. Was Lot's wife overcautious, perhaps? And that is why she became a pillar of salt. Interesting. Was she overcautious? Because she refused to serve guests in her home out of a fear that she would suffer some kind of reprisals against them. That's an interesting idea. I would, Rav Gershon, please develop it. Please let us know what you come up with.
Okay, anybody else? Rabbi, if I may, I'm going to just a very quick comment. You're asking the question, the Mianoki. It reminds me in Bereshit, this, what's the first question asked in the Torah is Ayeka, where God mm-hmm. approaches Adam. And I always, that's sort of the question of questions, you know, that God is asking man, Ayeka. So I just sort of, it reminded me when you said Mianoki, I think that's opening in Shmot, and here we have in Bereshit. I think it's there is a parallelism there.
Very beautiful. That's really beautiful. But, and that perhaps is representative of the difference between Bereshit and Shemot. Bereshit is where God is the one who asks man about his state of being. Ayeka, where are you? Or who are you? Or what are you? And Shemot is, we've evolved beyond the period of Genesis into the period of being coalescing into a nation capable of receiving a Torah. And Moshe, who represents humanity and particularly the Jewish people, is the shift is now, instead of God asking that question, man is in search of himself. Mi anochi, who am I? Very nice, very nice. That deserves to be developed also.
Sure. Rabbi J, Ayeka is the same letter as Echa, Yeshva Badad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jay, you're muted.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was muted. I was just saying thank you. Yeah, Eko, Echa, Ayeka, they all go together.
But, That's right.
Okay, Rabbi, I want to thank you very much. And okay, tomorrow morning, please God my shir at 9:30 on the Siddur. Next on Sunday, we got to begin our full slate of shirim for next week. Rabbi Liebtag at 11:15, right? Rachel Sharansky on Monday, and Rabbi Brody, et cetera, et cetera. We have our full slate of shirim, so we invite you to join us. And thank you very much. I want to thank Rabbi Korofkin again for his wonderful analysis. And Yashar Koach, and we look forward to learning with you again in the future. And thank you
are
very much.
Are the sources available?
I'm sorry? The sources will be posted. We got them we will post the sources on the website. I don't believe they're up yet, but please God, by tomorrow, we'll have them up on the website so you can take a look. I apologize for that. So,
okay. Thank you.
That's my fault. Thank you, everyone.
I have to take it.
It was wonderful. That's,
okay. Thank you. So nice to see you all. Thank Shabbat Shalom and all
great.
The best.
Shabbat Shalom.
It was terrific.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Shabbat Shalom. Toda Rabba.
Shabbat Shalom. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay, Lila Tov, everybody. Hope to see you soon. Thank you.